Writing your oncology case report is a huge undertaking, and it's easy to make silly mistakes that can derail your entire writing process. That's why you need my brand new masterclass, the 3-step framework for a finished case report. In this free masterclass, you'll learn 3 of the biggest mistakes to avoid when writing your case report, the secrets to actually finishing your case report, no matter the patient case you've chosen, and my proven 3-step framework for starting and finishing your very own oncology case report. Save your seat today at theoncopt.com/framework. Again, that's theoncopt.com/framework.
Welcome to the OncoPT podcast, where you'll learn from oncology experts, practitioners, and patients to help you on your journey to become a confident and competent OncoPT. Here's your host, Elise Cantu.
We have a very special guest today here on the OncoPT podcast. I'm so excited to have Dr. Katie Obright here back on the OncoPT podcast to really talk about what she's doing over in her world, her realm of physical therapy, and really how it is so integral and how I think we're going to start seeing more of this really implemented even within cancer rehab within OncoPT. So without any further ado, let's welcome Katie back to the OncoPT podcast. Katie, welcome back.
Hi, everyone. Thanks so much for having me back. I really appreciate it. Let's chit-chat about primary care. What do you want to know?
Okay. We're going to start super basic because this is something that I think unless you're aware of primary care PT, it's kind of misunderstood. So What is primary care physical therapy?
Yeah, that's just really a great place to start. So I'll back up 2 seconds. I am Katie Obright. I am the owner of Redefine Health Education, and I started my company with the physical therapist in mind that wants to move into more primary care practice. That's how I started my career, and it's really the best place to practice when you are integrated into a primary care team, whether that means that you're co-located in the same physical workspace or whether you're a part of a team, but maybe you're not in the same workspace, but the concept of practice is such that the whole team is involved. And I just found like huge gaps with that, which is why I kind of started my business and kind of why I'm doing what I'm doing. I'm the education chair for the primary care special interest group. So we're working on a lot of different things. And yeah, that's kind of just me in a nutshell. But to answer your question, what is primary care PT? So I actually offer this this presentation for DPT students, and I'm about to offer it. I'm about to send this thing through the SIG to all of the APTA state chapters, and I'm going to be like, okay, this is one offering where I'm going to offer this presentation. Date not set yet, but it's coming soon. Follow me on social media if you want to know more about it. But it's a whole presentation on what exactly is primary care PT as we are defining it. So there's no specific accepted definition right at this moment. However, we are currently in the process of developing the primary care PT clinical specialization. So, you know, we have the board certifications in oncology, board certifications in pediatrics, neuro, ortho, all those things. Well, guess what? About 5-6 years in the making, this clinical specialization is just about wrapped up, and fingers crossed it will go to the APTA House of Delegates in August of 2025. So be on the lookout for that. But to answer your question, primary care PT is the concept of working with patients either in an integrated primary care setting or just as a first contact provider that has a close relationship with the primary care PT, or excuse me, with the primary care team. And we focus on all aspects of health that affect physical and functional health. So we're not just evaluating patients that come in with shoulder pain specifically for their shoulder pain. If a patient comes in with a shoulder complaint, we're able to look at their big picture, all of their health history, their family history, their risk factors, their lifestyle behaviors, their social determinants of health, the population and the area in which they live, their access to care, their access to food, their access to mental health services. We're looking at things big picture, and then helping that patient, not just in an isolated fashion where we're, you know, we start with their shoulder pain and then we just work on their shoulder and then we discharge them and just never see them again. Or they have to come back and we have to start a quote new plan of care. Primary care PT is about having a revolving door relationship with the patient in conjunction with the primary care team. Mm-hmm. It's not just exclusive to direct access, which means that you can see a patient without a referral, because you can certainly see a patient without a referral and not practice with this mindset 100%. But it's about bringing the whole health aspects, you know, the population health considerations into play and not dialing into one practice area. So in the primary care SIG, we like to call our scope of practice is 3 feet deep and 3 miles wide. We are covering and understand the basics of care navigation, triage, risk factors, and all these considerations from everything from, you know, pediatric care. So pediatric to geriatric. So all ages and stages, and everything from oncology, neurology, pelvic health, ortho, you know, all the way into health promotion, health and wellness and prevention and health promotion. So it can be a little bit of everything, and it's going to depend on where you're at and what the goal of your practice is, on how much or how little you deliver different aspects of those features of primary care PT. But that's kind of what it is in a nutshell.
I have to tell you, Katie, so I didn't really put it together until I actually like saw a post you did a couple weeks ago, but this is not actually a new thing. I think this is something that a lot of us, myself included, are very unaware of, very uneducated about. Mm-hmm. But now that I'm thinking about it, we actually did an Oxford debate our first semester of PT school in one of our classes. And our topic was actually PT in primary care. And I remember our team absolutely like got annihilated in the debate because we thought we were talking about direct access. Mm-hmm. Because at the time, Texas actually did not have direct access in like any capacity. Now it's a little more expanded, but we made that absolute confusion. And I think that kind of informed me for a few years of like, I don't actually understand what primary care is. And so I'm so excited that you've really taken the lead on educating the masses on like, what does this actually mean? Because even in the definition that you just provided, that covers so much more than what I had even considered. And I'm obsessed with the fact that you talked about not just, you know, the person and what they're experiencing in the silo of like, that person, but also in the area they're in, mm-hmm. like geographically, population-wise. I mean, right now I'm just spinning my wheels thinking about like how much of that is not really considered in the context of physical therapy when like that mm-hmm. is super, super important. So, oh my God, thank you so much for establishing that, first of all.
On that note, on population health, if you don't understand if a patient has access to a safe home and workplace, somewhere where they can go and they feel safe and they feel comfortable and they feel supported by those around them, or in contrast, they feel entirely isolated. If you don't know if they have the transportation means to come see you and continue to see you, if you don't know if they have access to food and clean water and access to money and finances, and like just thinking about certain populations that I've studied in the past, there are some people that live in areas where the only groceries that they have are as a gas station with processed yeah. food and no produce. And that's the only thing that they have in like a 20-mile radius. Like that's it. So yeah. you got to know the population that you're working with. And those are some screening items in particular that set apart the primary care clinical specialist from, you know, somebody who's just performing in a direct access capacity.
Mm-hmm. So let's chat a little bit more about that. So you've really defined very well of what primary care physical therapy is. We already established that primary care physical therapy is not just direct access, right? What are maybe some other misconceptions or misunderstandings that the average physical therapist has about primary care physical therapy?
Right. The other top one outside of the direct access thing is the fact that it is just isolated to neuromusculoskeletal. So when I think about a lot of the history behind primary care PT comes from the military. Mm-hmm. I was in the military. That was my first job out of PT school. And as you would suspect, the military does have a very high percentage of musculoskeletal injuries and, chronic conditions and things like that. So primarily speaking, since 1972, I believe, the military physical therapist has been functioning in a role of a physician extender, specifically for neuromusculoskeletal complaints. Mm-hmm. When we translate that into the private sector, the public sector, the non-federal world, if you will, it then becomes looking at how our movement system and how our physical function has been affected by all of these non-communicable diseases, including cancer, including diabetes, hypertension and atherosclerosis, chronic stroke, and even down to mental health disorders that prevent people from having the necessary means, both internal and external, to participate in functional care. So if you think about somebody with depression, we know this now, that one of the first line treatments for depression and anxiety should be exercise. And that's not something that most physical therapists or most of the general consumer, patient consumers out there, that they would know that a physical therapist can help guide them through that process. And again, that just circles back to, like, that's the role of what a primary care PT does. It's not just isolating into this neuromusculoskeletal triage. It's understanding the depth and breadth of how all of your body systems can influence our body's ability to interact with our environments and our quality of life and all of the other, morbidity and mortality factors that go along with that. So one example of this would be, historically speaking, it was neuromusculoskeletal triage and care management. And to some degree, it still is that. It just depends on, like, if you're in, let's say you're in a co-located primary care clinic and they've got a really high volume of musculoskeletal problems. It might be that you're assigned to that clinic and your primary role is musculoskeletal triage. And you might not be able to handle any volume outside of that. But if you're in a smaller area with maybe a little bit lower volume, you might be considered the key functional, physical functional healthcare provider that can help patients across the spectrum. And one example of this that I love is, a patient that comes in with a history of COPD who just starts in a new role where she retired and is now working with her Meals on Wheels organization. And this patient comes in with a primary complaint of neck pain. But when you actually go and you dig a little bit deeper, she had on her body chart, and I know for those that are listening, her body chart is kind of pointing to, like, the anterolateral aspect of the neck, which when we think about that, we think, okay, is that a cardiopulmonary referral pattern? Or is that accessory respiratory muscle use? And when is she getting the symptoms? And is it exertion dependent? Because if so, what's going on with her COPD that might be causing that? Yeah. So then we have to think about, how are we going to manage this from a musculoskeletal perspective if it is those accessory muscles? But how are we also going to look at, okay, when's the last time that you talked to your pulmonologist about your medications? Are you desaturating with physical exercise? And if so, do we need just a medication adjustment or do we need supplemental oxygen? So we play such a tremendous role there. And I think that in general, the general outpatient physical therapist is not really thinking about these things. Because I find that in our education system, cardiovascular and pulmonary is almost kind of reserved for, like, acute care and inpatient rehab. and and maybe a little bit of home health, but then we sort of fail to translate that into the long term. This is a chronic condition. How do we even look at this and assess it in management? That in and of itself is primary care PT.
I really liked, so at CSM in February, I attended a session that was led by Dr. Rebecca Seagraves and this amazing team that actually were across disciplines, like not just within, like there was acute care PT. They had a patient perspective. They also had a doula. And the conversation itself was around peripartum, cardiovascular, cardiopulmonary health, and disparities. But one of the questions after the session was done that an audience member asked is like, this is really important. Where do we talk about this in PT school? And immediately Rebecca was like, in every unit, like we can't just have, and I'm thinking back to my own PT school experience. It was like, we had ortho and then we had neuro and then we had wound care. And then there was cardiopulm over here. And in actuality, we really need to be marrying those throughout because we don't just, or we shouldn't just look at our patient's shoulder dysfunction. And we see this, I think cancer rehab and onco PTs are maybe a little more attuned to this, but I know I need to be better about this. We need to be better about this as a health community of like, we can't just look at our person and see that they have left upper extremity lymphedema. Like we have to also consider that there are significant, and you and I just chatted about this, cardiopulmonary implications after their cardio and pulmonary toxic chemotherapy, and then the radiation that they received for their breast cancer treatment that are all focusing in this area. And it like Rebecca's answer, like I said, was just so simple, but so profound in so many different ways of like, we can't just look at one body system in this person. We have to think about all of the body systems, but then taking it that step further of all of the body systems in this human who lives in a very dynamic environment and is part of a, maybe a family unit and maybe works, or, you know, like the example you gave is a volunteer with Meals on Wheels. Like there is a whole person with a whole bunch of body systems that are all implicated or affected in all of this, but who also exists within this greater community. And we cannot discount any of those factors if we're really trying to make a difference in the function, in the independence, in the quality of life in our patient.
Mm-hmm. And oh, by the way, that same patient that we're talking about lives with her adult son with autism. And so that in and of itself is like, she's in a caretaker role. And she doesn't have anybody else that lives with her. Does she have any other? So what if it comes down to she needs supplemental oxygen and nobody else is really picking up on this? What does that mean for her adult son with autism that lives with her and depends on her and relies on her? There's so many different factors to looking at the context in which a human being is living that are going to affect their outcomes and that are going to affect our ability to work with them. So if you don't start out by painting a good picture of what that patient's life is like, and what I like to envision whenever I see a patient for the first time is I'm literally creating this picture, and I'm like, when I close my eyes, I can kind of see what their day is like from, you know, breakfast to bedtime and what's happening in between, and, you know, how much stress is there or how much happiness is there, how much joy, how much this and that. And all of those factors are going to tie into their risk factors and their ability to be successful with what you're doing. And that's going to tie into then your treatment plan and your treatment goals for them. So if you fail to do that, you're kind of doing yourself a disservice because you're probably going to end up working a lot harder to try to figure it all out on the back end.
This excites me, but it also gives me a little anxiety. Here's why. That is a lot. It's a lot to consider. How logistically can we implement this into our practice? Mm-hmm. Because I want to be as like excited as I am. I also want to make sure that we're putting tools into the listener's hand on like, how can you start implementing this more holistic, whole person approach into your day-to-day clinical care?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really good question. And it sounds overwhelming, but it's really not, because a lot of it you're already doing anyway. What I do is I start out, so whenever I teach my primary care courses, I always start by talking about initial intake. And you can use, so a lot of people have qualms with the intake forms. I get it. I do too. I developed my own intake form specifically to address and go hand in hand with what I need to collect in my interview with the patient and when I am receiving their history and all of that. So there's not anything on my intake form that I wouldn't, if they didn't have time to fill out the intake form, that I wouldn't then ask in the session. Okay. Now, let's say there are time constraints. Got it. We live in the real world. That happens all the time. People come late. Stuff happens. You know, so you can get patients that that are not the you know, the cream of the crop with providing their history and can go off on tangents. I go on tangents too. I get it. So in the real world, if you don't get to all of it on day one, make sure you're getting to all of the stuff that's really important. And again, that comes back to your triage. Does this person have anything presenting today that I need to address today or within the next week or two? And if that's the case, so that's like priority number one. All of the other additional lifestyle and contextual factors can come on, you know, visit two or in a follow-up, or, you know, maybe when you're drafting your note after the patient leaves and you're, you know, writing up your evaluation, maybe you consider like, oh, I really would like to know more about this. I have a section in my note where it says at next visit. And then I address, so that I can recall everything that I need to go over. This is not something that all needs to happen on day one. It's having the fundamental knowledge to understand everything that you would like to address in an ideal world, and then sprinkling it in throughout that course of care that you're working with someone. People get really hung up on the fact that, like, when you have an intake form, we got to cover everything in the evaluation. And that's just simply not true. There's some really weird, and I don't understand how this is, because I've never practiced this way as a PT and I was never taught this way fundamentally. But when I worked at this one clinic that was very short-lived, because I just didn't work out. The culture was not working out. But they were like, okay, this is what you do in the evaluation, and you set up this plan of care, and then that plan of care must be followed. And they would track it. Like, if you write in the initial plan of care that the patient's going to be seen two times a week, it doesn't then become this autonomous, like, oh, if they don't ultimately, you know, a couple weeks down the road don't need two times a week, then we adjust that. And because that's what we do. There's that kind of weird nonsense with that. That is not primary care PT. That's just like a business model. And it's not a sustainable one, really, truly. But I kind of just lost my train of thought because I was thinking about how bad things are along that line. Can you remind me where we were going with that? I do this at least once a podcast.
I'm just so distracted by how dysfunctional that is. Like, it is. What?
It's true. It's like it's a very typical outpatient corporate metric that is tracked, where they'll look at the initial evaluation, and if you like set this, you know, this frequency in a plan of care, then they want you to follow through with that for X amount of visits. And it's very silly. It's extremely silly. It makes absolutely no sense. It's bordering fraudulent, in my opinion, because then you're touching into medical necessity. But that model does not work in anything that I'm talking about. It just doesn't work. So that's what I'm talking about, is like just having the flexibility to adjust things with your patients over time, and ultimately having that revolving door model. And let's say you do work in the insurance world, totally fine. You can set up a physical therapy episode of care per whatever the insurance guidelines are, but then please continue to offer the patients additional options outside of insurance that meet your like how you want to deliver their enduring care. So if you want to have wellness visits, if you want to have, you know, touch points or booster sessions, please offer a hybrid payment model that doesn't necessarily have to meet their insurance, and at least offer it to them. patients are willing to pay out of pocket, especially as insurance is covering less and less and less. You're going to see it a whole lot.
Yeah.
I don't even know how we got to that, Elise, but it just bothers me. So
no, I'm really here for it. And that's one of the things I'm actually looking to do in my own private practice, which is like, you know, I'm obviously doing my one-on-one sessions, but one of the big things I see in my world, and I'm sure in others, is balance problems. And so what I'm envisioning and what I'm working towards is like once a week, I'm going to start doing a balance class. Mm-hmm. Group class, come on over. It's, you know, it'll be like, I don't know, $5 or whatever. And then there's a social component. There's also working on obviously the balance part, which is a big deal. And that's yet another way that I can ensure that I'm working with my patients on this. If nothing else, it might provide them an opportunity to structurally and supervisedly get some of their HEP done. So I think, again, I think what I really, really like about the primary care considerations is a lot of this is what we talk about in OncoPT. We want to look at the whole person. We want to look at all of their body systems. For me, as I'm hearing Katie talk about this more of, you know, what are some of those other considerations even outside of that person that are crucial to consider? And I want to bring in something that a previous guest had talked about that really just layers in with what Katie's talking about really nicely. You know, I've had Alex Hill, Oncopelvic PT, on the podcast multiple times now. And we've talked about, you know, how do we have some of these hard conversations about, you know, peeing and pooping and sex and all the things that people just want to cringe when we talk about. Maybe we don't talk about that on the first visit. Like Katie was saying, maybe we talk about that a few visits down the road. But what a great opportunity to show the patient, you know, not just with pelvic floor dysfunction, but also the other things that Katie's bringing up here. What a great way to demonstrate that we are looking out for that person and the whole person in the context of the world that they live in and what they have to do and what they need to do to get by, than to be asking these questions and to be having these conversations and looking at all of these things that this human has to deal with on the day in and day out of just trying to survive some days.
Oh my gosh. Like you hit the nail on the head. Like it, because if we don't understand those factors about our patient, and then we just sort of do like this, this would be best for, so let's say somebody had like a tendinopathy. Okay, this is what's recommended for the tendinopathy. Blah, 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 blah. This is how many times you should come in. This is what you should be doing at home. And if we don't start thinking about what that patient's home life is like, maybe they've got like six kids. Maybe they've got, and maybe they commute an hour both ways to work. Is your, you know, tendinopathy program that needs to happen, you know, twice a day and it's going to take them 20 minutes to complete actually going to work for that patient? Like, let's think about that. Because in my world, as, you know, a business owner, mom of two, wife, like lots of community stuff and school stuff going on, there's a lot of things that wouldn't work for me that a PT, if I were to go to PT and they were to give me like a traditional plan or recommendation, I would be like, nope, can't. I just don't have the time. We need to focus on something smaller. And again, I say this all the time. Do not hit patients with the kitchen sink because nothing's going to stick. Focus on like the biggest priority at that time. But then again, in that, you know, at next visit or in subsequent visits, part of your note, you can reference back to the things that then become important and including the patient in that process. You know, maybe you identify in your screening that a patient does have trouble with depression or anxiety. You know, maybe that patient in your questioning, maybe that patient just doesn't want to go down that road with you. But maybe as you continue to work with them and as you continue to identify like some of their barriers with, you know, program adherence or lifestyle alteration, then it might come out. And then you're already aware of it. You already are kind of set up to provide them with not only your caring words and thoughts that you care for them and that you're here for them, but also to set them up with resources that are going to work with them, whether that's a, you know, a therapist that can get with them via telehealth, or somebody that's in close proximity to their home. And you already have all of those resources kind of like laid out and lined up, so you're not blindsided when somebody is like, oh, by the way, you know, so on your on their intake form, maybe they circle something related to sexual function, but you don't get to it on day one. And they come down, and I had this happen to me. I had a man, and we were sitting in the middle of a clinic, like where people, like other patients were. And he was like, yeah, I just have all of this pain when I ejaculate. And I was like, I was totally blindsided because I just wasn't aware, or I wasn't tracking that. I had forgotten about it. It was just something on the intake form that I forgot to ask about. And then I was totally blindsided. And I was also like, I could sense that I was uncomfortable, and I could sense that he felt that I was uncomfortable. And then it just turned into like, oh my God, I lost the therapeutic alliance with this patient. So yeah. Layering all of those things out is really important to sustaining your therapeutic alliance with a patient. And again, that's all coming back to your patient's going to come back to you as their primary care PT.
I love so much how I feel like Onco PT is close. I feel like we have a good understanding of just how much the whole body is affected by cancer and cancer treatment. But there's more we can do. Like, I'm just reflecting my own clinical practice right now. I'm like, there is more that I can be doing to adopt more. It really is a much more proactive thinking than what I think. Physical therapy for a long time and still continues to be very reactive. Mm-hmm. And I think this really forces us to think more proactively, which is a shift. It's an adjustment, but we really have to embrace this. What are some other ways, Katie, that we can kind of marry or meld Onco PT and primary care PT as we are working with our cancer survivors?
Yeah. I mean, as you just said that, I was reflecting back on, and I don't know if I said this earlier, but I spent a year at the University of Oklahoma's Cancer Center. And after working in the military, active duty military for 4 years, that was such a big step for me. And it was an area where I was like, oh my gosh, like and here I am, like coming out of the military, like thinking I know a lot of things. I had just gotten like my OCS, and just thinking I know a lot of things about a lot of things. And then I go in, and my very first patient, he came in with hip and back pain, but he had a large abdominal incision that was from a colorectal resection surgery. He had an ostomy. He had a wound vac because the wound was dehiscing. And he just comes like strolling in, and he's like, all right, help me out. And I was like, okay, I don't know anything about anything about anything now. And that setting, the cancer setting, really helped pull all of the pieces together for me. And I was just like, because again, we've talked about this, cancer is something that affects all body systems. And it's also something that not only from like a physiologic perspective, but from a psychosocial, socioeconomic perspective, it also affects that as well. So internal and external factors are impacted by this. And that experience truly led me to learn more about how impactful exercise and therapy can be for individuals that are dealing with impairments and problems that span the spectrum of health. And so I gained such a big appreciation for like the neurologic system and the cardiovascular and pulmonary system, the immune system working in cancer care. So I think if there's any specialty that is well equipped to look at the big picture, it's going to be your onco population, onco specialty. So, you know, round of applause for all of you there, because you already have so much to think about. And so don't ever think that you're missing something, because nobody can cover everything. And everything does not need to be covered. So it just kind of depends on the patient in front of you, and you just kind of follow this priority, you know, an order of priority with the things that the patient is presenting with. And I just think I'm very passionate about like just keeping the door open so that when things And I, again, I hate the word discharge. I don't like the concept of discharging a patient. I think it should always be like a follow-up as needed, or let's check in 6 months. And I get that the insurance system is a little difficult with that, but I think that we're evolving. So to answer your question, which was how can Onco PTs, you know, do a better job of this? I think you're already doing a really good job of this. But then my only other addition would be if you know of and maybe primary care PT doesn't exist yet in the area that you work, where you have a PT that either identifies as a whole health primary care PT or PTs integrated into primary care. My only suggestion would be if you are practicing in a cancer population, all your patients are going to end up going back to primary care at some point. So maybe offering to do some, you know, a presentation for your local primary care teams that a lot of your patients go to, educating on, you know, how you can help them throughout these processes and, you know, how maybe physical therapists of other specialties can cover down on some of the things that they may expect to see over time. I think just an increasing awareness amongst the primary care community is a really helpful thing. But then also amongst our local, you know, physical therapy community is a really big thing too, because I think a lot of these patients are probably going to like general orthopedic practices, yes. PT practices, where the general ortho practices may or may not be well suited or well equipped to be able to meet their needs as well as you, as the specialist can. So I think it all just comes back to like awareness and communication and, you know, driving home that community concept. I love all of those things. Mm.
I really like the community aspect. That's something that really resonates with me. And again, to kind of pull forward what Katie said previously about you don't have to do it all either. This is where I really love, you know, I'm working with a patient right now who we're working on, you know, different side effects related to her cancer and cancer treatment. But one of the things she's really dealing with is the psychological implications of having a cancer diagnosis and going through that treatment and whatnot. And so what I'm able to do is leverage, you would really benefit from seeing the quality of life provider at the cancer center where you're at. Mm. I know who that is. I can help at least get you connected with that. So, you know, I'm screening for these issues, but then I know this is where my expertise ends, right? This is the line. I know who's going to fill in and, you know, step up to that line and take it from there, kind of deal. And I think that's where we really have an advantage in OncoPT is we know very acutely that if a person is diagnosed with cancer, they are seeing multiple oncologists. Mm-hmm. They are seeing multiple other specialists as part of their care team during this process. And we are a part of that. And I think we really kind of have to look at that more in physical therapy as like, and I love you keep coming back to this, Katie, this primary care team. Like we are a team in all of this. Mm-hmm. And how can we leverage other team members in our greater community to really step up and fill in those gaps that the patient might be experiencing? Oh my God, this makes me so excited, Katie.
Yeah, and that's huge. And I also want to reiterate, so coming back to the team concept, I will always refer to it as such. I believe that we are all better together. I do not believe that PT can solve the world's problems or patients' problems entirely. I do believe that we need to work in the context of our community, whether we are able to be co-located in a physical space or formally be a part of a team in a formal way, because you will just keep doing that. Just make it a part of your everyday thing. I'm a part of this patient's healthcare team. Whether or not other healthcare providers on that team agree with that or not, it's not your problem. Most of them are going to say absolutely yes, 100%. I don't want you to get into the mindset that people are not going to want to do that, but I want to paint a real picture here. And that's the real picture of, you know, my current practice. I have a very small, you know, my full-time gig is, you know, education and doing this, you know, running Redefine Health Education, raising my boys, et cetera. But I do have a small home/mobile practice here in my hometown. And one of the things that I run into, because I am not co-located anywhere, I do not have a health system affiliation, I'm not a part of a unified EMR, is when I call other offices, I get stopped, hard stopped by the clerk. And it's like, all right, leave it, fax a note, leave a message. If we feel like it's necessary, we'll get back to you. And it's like, dude, can I just please just let me talk to somebody and they will understand why I'm calling. And it's like, so you will run into that. And that's a part of the way that our system works. Everybody is freaking busy, like beyond all, especially primary care. This is part of the problem of our system. Oh, they see like 60 patients a day. Do they want to see that much? Absolutely not. They are so strapped for time. They're so burnt out, which is why a lot of them are leaving. So please understand, like, their reality is not amazing either. And they probably do want to call you back, but maybe they just don't have time. But the ones that you're able to connect with, it's like, oh my gosh, like, thank goodness. What's the best way that I can contact you in the future? Because it took me a long time to be able to actually talk to you. And then in those circumstances, in my experience, they're like, hey, just text me whenever. Like, text me when you got a problem and I'll give you a call. And that ends up becoming really, really, really helpful. So you are a part of that patient's team and establish yourself as such. Don't, you know, ask permission. Don't do this and that. You're part of a collaborative healthcare team, but there's a big culture shift that still needs to take place amongst all healthcare professionals, PTs included, that team really does exist. And we need to be a part of facilitating that change. So in my opinion, don't take no for an answer. Like, you're part of that patient's healthcare team. You deserve to be, you know, included, respected, treated as such, 100%.
Have you ever heard of, you know, when you hear a no, it's not right now?
Yes. In fact, a couple of years ago at CSM, I don't even remember what it was about, but I got up to the mic in one of the sessions, asked a question, made a comment. And then General Deirdre Tahan, she's the first general of the SP Corps, like, physical therapist, woman, amazing. She came up to me afterwards and she was like, you're a shining star. I remember her saying this because, like, it was like, oh my gosh, this is like a, you know, God amongst us, saying, you know, like, I think you're a shining star. And she said something along the lines of, don't stop. Don't stop. When you receive no as an answer, no is just a temporary resolution to yes. And I loved that. And I was like, yes, I love it. I'm going to keep going. And I hope that that's motivation for everybody here, because I think Elise and I were just talking before we actually started recording. Thank God that we can give each other the energy, because the barriers that exist to prevent our profession moving forward are almost insurmountable, it seems sometimes, but you just have to keep going. It's about grit and perseverance and about just being dedicated to this culture change and being dedicated to doing right by our patients and by, you know, our healthcare community at large. So yes, no is just a temporary resolution toward yes.
I love that so much. I have actually, so I keep this note on my desk and I moved it over here like the other day as I was straightening up. But it's a quote by famous aviator Bessie Coleman, which is, every no takes me closer to a yes.
Yes.
Which, it's so funny that like, I mentioned that in a podcast episode I did last week and it's coming up again, which I think speaks to just kind of what's happening right now in healthcare and this shift that needs to happen. It is happening in some areas. It's not happening in other areas, but just keep going, friend, because you're doing the good work out there. And man, I think this is why I have the podcast. It's really to be amped up and encouraged and motivated by people like Katie when the going gets tough and I'm disheartened, I'm discouraged. And then I get on here, I'm like, yeah, Katie. Yeah,
dude,
let's go.
Same. Dude, same. Same.
How can people connect with you, follow you, learn more from you on primary care PT and all the things?
Yeah. Okay. So I have the Primary Care PT podcast. So go ahead and have a listen to that. Lots of great episodes coming out, including this is actually me and Elise doing a swap episode. We just recorded her episode with me. I'm recording my episode with her, and then we'll, you know, send it out into the netherworld so everybody can listen. So I have the Primary Care PT podcast. You can also follow me on social media at Redefine Health Ed. The only one that doesn't have that is X, which it's hard for me to even say that. And that one's at Redefine Con Ed, because it was one character too long. I need to revisit that. Yeah, you can email me. My website is redefinehealthed.com, and that has all of our coursework out there. I have a primary care foundations for primary care PT course that we keep adding layers to. We also have a musculoskeletal imaging certification, courses in rheumatology, and all different like specialty topics along the primary care space. Just content that is generally less well served by, you know, your general ortho courses and your general neuro courses. We try to like bring out those different, you know, other primary care considerations into our coursework. So, redefinehealthed.com. And yeah, so one of those places you'll be able to find me.
Yeah. Oh my God. And we will of course link to all of that in the show notes for today's episode. Katie, I can't thank you enough. I'm so glad that we did our episode batch recording, because I felt like you amped me up over on your podcast, and then you come over here and just drop all these pearls on my podcast. Like, it's such a good way to, I think, get reinvigorated and reignited in the passion of like, let's go out and change the world. And we're not all going to change the world at the same time in the way that we want to. But it really comes down to, you could potentially be changing that patient's entire world for the better.
Yes.
And we have a responsibility to do that. Yes. And it's through leveraging this holistic, whole person perspective that I think primary care has a really solid, strong grasp on that we need to pick up more of. And I'm just really excited about that.
I am too. You and me both. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the OnCo PT podcast. If you'd like to help support the podcast, please share it with others, leave a rating and review, or support us on Patreon.